Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Only a Bag, an Italian travel podcast. I'm Darcy Melton, and with me is...
Nathaniel Mellor. Hello, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here in every episode.
It's amazing. it's a work of art, honestly. No, what is that called? When somebody does it out of love? It's a labor of love. It's also a work of art. art's a little bit of objective.
Well, it's an art.
Subjective, I guess. Yeah. It is an art. What are we talking about today, Darcy?
We're going to talk about Perugia.
Perugia. It's a beautiful, wonderful jewel of the middle of the country. I was going to say north, but really, arguably, it's only in the north.
It's middling.
And before we get into that, instead of saying stuff like a quick word from today's sponsor, because we don't have sponsors, but that can change as soon as you want to sponsor us. We would like to talk about Trusted House Sitters. There's a link in the description, an affiliate link in the description. It is one of the main ways that we travel around. It's basically a house sitting website. We have a whole episode series, I think 5 episodes, on house sitting, I believe.
Is it 5 episodes?
I think it's 5 episodes.
Wow, yeah. We talk about house sitting a lot.
We do.
Yeah.
And then we have like sort of corresponding blog posts on it for those of you who prefer reading to listening. But if you'd like to sign up for Trusted House Sitters, there is a link in the description. We would love it. It helps out the channel, helps out us, makes us feel good inside. And yeah, please leave a review, follow us, like us.
Yeah, whatever you have access to give us positive vibes.
Yeah, and also if you're listening from Stitcher, I just found out that Stitcher is now like shutting down operations soon.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're basically saying like, you know, tell your listeners to switch to something else.
Oh, wow.
So apparently they're shutting down operations soon. So you can find us on everywhere else, Google,
yes,
Apple.
Everywhere you listen to podcasts.
Audible, Spotify. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the show. And without further ado, I give to you Perugia.
Perugia.
So what's the first thing to talk about?
I think we should do a brief history.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
I say that you know more about the history than I do, so that was really a setup for you.
That's one of those we's, like, we should clean the house. And by we, I mean, this is the royal we. It's the...
Okay, but I often clean the house, so that was a bad example.
Okay, but only because you like to clean houses, I think.
That's not true.
We're going to ignore that part and move on. Really fulfilling some traditional gender roles here.
No, you do help clean the house. He does help clean the house, everybody.
Thank you for rescuing my
Okay, let's talk about Perugia
propriety.
Now. Yeah.
So Perugia is it's kind of a very underrated city, if we're being honest. I said honest twice there, which makes me feel dishonest. But genuinely speaking, it's quite an underrated city, in my opinion.
And it's traveled... It's not like there aren't tourists there, but I think there are a lot of... non-American tourists there. I mean, the Americans
for sure
go there, but
no, but
it's not like a travel destination,
yeah,
for Americans.
Well, I think also in Florence, you'll just so easily overhear English just walking around, and in mm-hmm. Perugia, it's kind of like, oh, are they speaking English?
Yeah.
But it's basically, so it's in Umbria, which is, Perugia is also the capital of Umbria, mm-hmm. Which is a region sort of near Lazio. Rome is the capital of Lazio, and near Tuscany, which Florence is the capital of Tuscany.
It's sandwiched right in the middle.
Yeah, and it has a lot of that but classic Tuscan countryside look. You mm-hmm. know, it's got the rolling hills, it's got the cypress trees, it's got the olive trees. It's just quite, it's like it's curated, but untouched curated, if that makes sense.
I can see that.
You know, yeah. There's not a lot of, like, they keep their, I say this in comparison to, like, the South, where the South is sort of, like, just sort of all over the place, but the North is very much, like,
got more structure.
Yeah, there's, like, the industrial zone, and then there's, mm-hmm. like, nothing industrial outside of the industrial zone.
Yeah.
So there might be little areas where, like, oh, that's where, you know, there's factories, and then there's just untouched countryside everywhere else. So Perugia is quite famous for being kind of in the center of this really beautiful countryside, and it's right up on the top of a hill, sort of like actually the main boulevard, the main concourse, if you will, sort of runs along the ridge of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're on the sort of the main street, you're actually at the pretty much the topmost point of Perugia. There might be like some other sort of slightly higher like little point around.
I think one of the monasteries might be on a higher point, but it's not on the outskirts of Perugia, but it's not like in the city center. The city center is pretty high, though. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah, we didn't look it up, but partly it's just because all these hilltop towns are sort of like, oh, they're high. It's like Siena, you know, it's high, but it's not like, no, it's not Denver, you know, I mean, which is not on a hill. It's just up in the mountains. So it's mm-hmm. not like.
But that being said, when you're in the center of Perugia, so there's like the main stretch, which has a bunch of shops and things, and then it ends at a certain point in this lovely park, mm-hmm. and there's a vista So oh, you beautiful. Really do beautiful get vista. A sense of being quite high up.
Yeah. No, and it's I mean, it's gorgeous. It's just sort of very, I don't know, you can see part of the town from the vista. It's like part of the town that's kind of spreads out. Mm-hmm. I don't know what direction, to the left of the vista. But plus you can see the kind of, I mean, you know, it's a little bit weird because you can see part of the industrial area below. But it's not like that close. It doesn't like ruin the view. It just ends up being kind of quite beautiful. And we've also spent quite a lot of time in Perugia in a like, comparative sense. I don't mean like quite a long time, like 7 years or 17 years.
But compared to the way we live.
Yeah. And compared,
we hop around a lot.
We do. And I mean, the whole only a bag thing is a very honest assessment of how we live.
Yeah.
And it's now become only a bag each, though. So that didn't sound as good for a title of a podcast.
Well, when we travel for short periods, it's just
it's a bag.
A bag. But now we've kind of extended into 3 month, 6 month stints.
And we talked about it before. This is getting so off topic. We've talked about it before, though, how you do like, we try the one bag, but if you're going between, if like on a shoulder season, which is when we normally travel,
yes,
you can't really afford to just bring like only summer stuff or only winter stuff because it's going to be a bad experience, we found. That being said, we have spent about 6 months in Perugia, which given the fact that we've lived in Italy for like 4 years, it's a pretty significant amount of time.
Yeah.
And no, it was basically like it was during COVID. And while we are a huge, what is it? I don't know. We basically, we kept encouraging people not to travel during COVID. I know Italy was really quite serious about that. And it made it really, it presented interesting issues or interesting problems, interesting dilemmas, because when everything first shut down in that March, basically everyone was either trapped at their, like, wherever they happen to be working, which isn't necessarily where they live. There's a lot I don't know if they, is it like, not transient workers, but there's that, there's a lot of work, like, for instance, here where we live, there's a lot of road workers. But the road workers don't live here because this is a tiny town of like 2,000 people.
I think
people.
That is transient. Is it transient? Or okay. Transitional.
Transitional. Transient?
Something
I know.
Like that. Yeah.
I probably should have Googled that. So we basically, it's like a lot of these small towns, they have to bring in workers from bigger cities that have that sort of experience. And so you get these workers staying in a town for like 6 months, 7 months to do road work. And of course they go back to like, you know, they're not like, you know, a 2 days trip from their home city. They're only a couple hours away from their home city. But it just is like for the 5 days that they're here, they sleep here and they live here. So it made it really difficult during COVID for people to sort of like, you know, I'm trapped in a place I don't live. And it's in a place where it's supposed to be very temporary housing. And we only happened to get the house sit because it was sort of like after the initial lockdown, everyone was like, oh, the numbers are dying back. Like, we're going to go back to normal. We're going to just keep our masks on. And we're like, okay. And then there's a couple of house sits available for basically for Americans who were using the opportunity to finally visit family that they had missed out on, like, essentially. Like, because no, it's basically, Darcy's giving me a strange look. But no, there's a lot of the house sits we found were Americans who owned houses in Italy who basically were trying to get back to the States either to renew their visa or to not get kicked out.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So they're like, I need somebody like as soon as humanly possible because otherwise we're, you know. Like, my cat is gonna have to be here alone for three months. So we were kind of in a really weirdly amazing position for that because it was like we're already here, we already had visas, we didn't have an issue, we weren't planning on leaving. So it was actually kind of this interesting little time. And Perugia fell just after one of our first house sits in Rome. We keep saying house sit, but there's a trusted house sitters link in the description if any of this subtle marketing is working on any of you. It was interesting because we got into Perugia for 1 month the first time? I think it was 1 month, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Okay. And then we really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
The apartment was unfortunately not available past that first month because it was, as we're going to talk about in just maybe a couple seconds here, maybe a couple minutes, depending how long-winded I am. Perugia, I'm drinking coffee during this episode, so apparently I should not be trusted
buckle
to drink
up,
coffee.
Buckle up, friends. He's going to have a lot of energy.
Buckle up, friends. We're 9 minutes into talking about Perugia and haven't even started. Oh, God.
So we couldn't stay there. Why?
We couldn't
because
stay there.
Students were coming.
Student housing. Basically, it was a student apartment. Not forced.
Not through the university, but there are many students who live in Perugia. So there's a lot of housing that is geared towards students.
There's also a lot of, I assume it's Italy-wide, but it could just be Perugia specifically. But there's a lot of financial incentives to have students living there. Mm-hmm. So when we were trying to find another apartment, it was really difficult because there was all of them were like students only. So we ended up leaving, going to visit my mom for a week, week and a half, and then basically like kind of using the contacts we had made in Perugia in that short time and asking everybody like, have you heard of something available?
Mm-hmm.
Darcy finally found somebody with a little studio apartment. But in this kind of beautiful building, great location.
Yeah, it was lovely.
And so
balcony,
like,
great balcony, view.
Yeah. And I mean, it had like a full kitchen, despite the fact it was a studio apartment. It was like, so it had the
oven. A little living room area. It's just one room.
Big bed, giant bed. Yeah. Amazing. Dining room table. It was all in the same room. Plus the bathroom was not in the same room, which was really nice. I just throw that out there because sometimes it's like, that's just like...
Is it like a New York studio or is it like the rest of the world kind of studio?
Yeah, it was like they built out of the studio into, you know, but this was kind of in a separate area, which is nice for like just space reasons mostly, I think. But no, that is to say, once we got there the second time, I mean, it was like a week and a half, 2 weeks later, out of nowhere. It was like, I mean, we were planning on like, there's supposed to be some get together, but it's like, we couldn't do it in anybody's house. So it was like, we're supposed to do this like out open air, like,
because the restrictions were that you had to, I think it was like wearing a mask and distancing and not being inside, but you could still like
fewer
get
than
together.
7 people.
Yes. There something was a limit like on how many people. So we kind of arranged something and then the government was like, oh no, that's really bad. Don't get together.
Well, it's really strange. That was the one too. And because all governments in Italy, what I'm talking about, all regional governments in Italy were doing it differently. Like they were, it's like federally, there was kind of like one lockdown, but then regionally you were allowed to impose stricter lockdowns. And some regions were very strict, some regions less so, mostly depending on like their population density. And then same thing with cities. Cities were allowed to impose even stricter restrictions if they felt necessary. Mm-hmm. And I think we spent Christmas in Perugia, which was nice, but it was also like, I mean, you know, only the grocery store was open. I think only the pharmacy and nobody's out in the street. So it was like, you know, just
and you had to shop one at a time at that point. And it was a weird time.
There was like somebody at the door, like preventing anyone from going in. Like,
yes, it was like the security person at the door.
And they were
the
like waiting
store.
For someone to come out before you go in.
Yes.
But these aren't huge grocery stores, by the way. So I don't want to like give this impression of these like massive grocery stores.
Yeah, they're very much like center city grocery stores
like
a couple aisles.
Bodega or something. Yeah. Like a corner store. This is, I guess, how a lot of the grocery stores are in small towns in Italy. But it was just, I think that is all to say, our initial perception of Perugia was quite built around a sparsity of people, like a scarcity. There we go, folks. One of us is a writer, believe it or not.
It
was sparsely populated. Mm-hmm. And no, I think so that built up a lot of our, like, weirdly, we had a really good time. Despite the fact it was a studio apartment, despite the fact that, you know, you couldn't really go out and do anything, it was still like a really just a beautiful time. And no, I think we all enjoyed, like, even New Year's Eve, it was like we're all in the balconies and
everybody was out on their balconies and you couldn't necessarily see people, but you could hear people. So we were shouting. I mean, this is not like balcony right next door neighbor. This is like balcony across town. You could hear and see people. So we were all shouting to each other. Happy New Year, and it was really, really sweet.
No, it's because the balcony was really, it was like quite private. I mean, in the summer it would have been perfect because it would have basically just looked over a wooded area and then the other side of town, and which I guess brings us perfectly, if you're stuck with us. 13 minutes in, people are like, oh my God, I just wanted to know about Perugia. No, but it was the way the town is set up is almost like if you can picture a stick figure in your mind without the head. So it's basically, it's one trunk, which is that main concourse that ends in the park, and maybe the park's ahead. But then
that's
there's
cute,
these little like legs that come off on these different, and I'm assuming they're ridges, just the way that like there'll be a road and there's houses on both sides or businesses on both sides. And they both on both sides, they slope down basically. But all the neighborhoods, there's like Elche and there's, that's literally the only one coming to mind, Monteluce.
Yeah.
There's a few others. They all have these specific little names, but they all sort of stick figure out from the main torso. So there's essentially like these four or five little like roads, and the rest of it in between, like between two roads, besides like the house and besides, you know, any other business that might be there, it's just nothing but either like forest or olive grove or something like that. Mm-hmm. So where we lived, it was just like, oh, we're looking out on one of these sort of foresty olive grove areas to the next arm of the town. And it was just, it kind of makes it really interesting. And I don't know, it almost gives like all the neighborhoods its own bit of flavor, so to speak.
Yeah, like, and they're fairly distinct.
Very much, yeah, there's definitely, and we'll talk about that, I think, a lot we're going to talk about the food separately, but there's a student neighborhood, we call it, but it also has the really high density of
International foods.
Yeah, international foods. And they're really, I mean, all of them were amazing. It was just one of the things, it was like, you know, not only was it good, it was just, I mean, you know, Italy's, it's always weird when Italy, not weird. It's always strange to see international food in Italy, though, only because of how little international food Italians will eat.
Yes.
You know, they're so like, no, Italian food's the best. Why would we ever eat anything else? And if you go to a small Italian town, you are never going to see another, like, cuisine there.
Yeah, another culture of food. Yeah, it's just Italian.
I mean, like, in America, like, I'm very used to America, but it's not, like, out of the realm possibility to go to a small town in Georgia and find Chinese food or Mexican food.
Yeah, there's Japanese food right down the street when we live in the States.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, well, that's, we do live in a kind of a slightly small city. I mean, it's a small city. But I'm thinking, like, you can go to, like, outside a small city and there's, like, I don't know, in wherever, and then find, like, Jamaican food or something. And everyone's like, that's the best Jamaican food in all of Southeast Georgia. And it's like, oh, that really? Oh, my God. So that's all to say. It's like, we grew up with a culture of, it's just, I mean, I think Americans in general grew up with a culture of, you know, what do you want for dinner tonight? Is it Chinese food, Japanese food, Asian food, Italian food, French food? Well, nobody's eating French food, but you know what I'm saying? I don't know. But I think there's that kind of variety that doesn't really exist in the rest of Italy. But if that's something that, especially for living in a place, if that's something that interests you, our dear, dear listeners, Perugia, for us, it was such a beautiful place to find, especially after Rome, which, being honest, it was like kind of difficult to find.
Yeah. There's not that much of international food in Rome. There's some. And I will say, in Florence, we actually, the last time we went, we found a street full of, I'm going to say, Asian restaurants, only because I don't want to single out a certain culture or country, because I don't know that they're all the same.
No, because it was definitely, they also had, like, one was like Szechuan Chinese specific. It was like a Szechuan hybrid, right, or something they called it. And then, like, the next one over was all dumplings, or all, it was like they all had very specific niches.
So East Asian, I will say. This is not like India or Russia.
Yeah, that's a good point. Actually, there wasn't really a lot of Russian food there. Yeah, that's a good point. So now that we've given you a very useless background on Perugia, let's actually give you some real good information. I'm so excited that our whoever's listening to this by this point is just like, what is going on? I hope this isn't taking up important time for you, our dear listeners. So Perugia is the capital of Umbria, as we have mentioned. It's also, and you're going to notice this if you ever visit, a lot of Perugians call it Perugia, pronouncing it with the S-I-A. And in the, I want to say the north point of town, there is the Etruscan gate, the Etruscan wall, and it's this giant wall, obviously been there for a couple thousand years. I think some Romans burned the city in the turn of the first millennium. So what is that, like? Between 40 BC and 40 AD, somewhere in there, they burned Perugia. But the wall was pretty much undamaged because it's an enormous wall.
Well, and they left like a couple of temples as well. Yeah, the temples don't still exist, but...
I think they probably broke those down again at some point. They're like, ah,
temples. They deconstructed those temples. They're like, we don't need this anymore.
Well, they might need the stone for something else. Who knows?
But when the Romans came through, they left the temples, right?
Yeah.
And the, obviously, I don't know if they tried to burn the wall, but it's part of the city they left.
But then they burned everything else. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because on that gate is the word Perugia, S-I-A, and it was one of the 12 cities, which is what the Etruscan 12 cities. It was like the Dodecapolis is what the Greeks called it, just which is Greek for 12 cities. In English, it's also like the Confederate of 12 cities or the 12, something like that, Confederacy of 12 cities. But it seems like sort of a loose governmental organization of the Etruscans at the time, which is just fascinating because it's essentially one of the seats of power of the Etruscans. Mm-hmm. And there's still a huge amount of influence from the Etruscans still in Perugia, from, again, things like the walls, there's the Etruscan well, all the way to cuisine. Lot of Perugia's, like, still their dishes, their national dishes, are based off Etruscan dishes. And you can still get food tours and stuff in Perugia that are Etruscan-based food tours. And if that's interesting to you, you know, we'll throw an affiliate link down below to some, probably, you know, Viator or tickets or something like that, that has if we can find a good, trustworthy...
Say that word again, Viator?
Viator.
Not Viator?
Is it Viator? Like Aviator?
Yeah.
Was that the A?
Yeah,
I guess I'm going with the Italian, Viator. Like Via. Oh, no, Via. I went Via. Who says Via?
I don't know.
Oh, man. Somebody's listening, like, I say Via.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
So Viator. Anywho, there will be a link in the description if we can find it, one that we kind of trust and or recognize from our time in Perugia. If we do not find one, we will not put a link in the description. That is not to say there are no trustworthy or good ones. It's just to say it has not been one we heard of, and we don't want to support something that we don't.
Yeah, that's our. That's, I was about to say that's our thing. No, really, we only recommend <It's everyone's> things. We only recommend things to y'all that we either have experienced or have seen or have good authority on them being valid and good.
Valid and good, but also useful, I think, because that's some of it. Is like,
yeah,
I mean, a lot of it is just, it's sort of like, I don't know. A lot of times, I think we'll suggest stuff, especially on the blog that has affiliate links, and it's not like you're gonna die without this item. Please buy it now from our link. It's just more of like, this has been incredibly useful. There are other versions of this out there in case you want to find other versions, but if you want to support us, use our link. But yeah, that's just to say, if we have the link, please use it, but also trust in food.
My brain had already moved. I'm on food. I had great sandwich today, y'all.
Two sandwiches, y'all.
Did. They were two half sandwiches.
I know, but it's...
They were each the size of a full sandwich, but the slice of bread was extra big, so...
And also, like, there's nothing, like... It's not, like, I don't know, heavy food. I mean, it's basically two pieces of bread,
Really full now and really happy because it was a great sandwich, and so now I'm still thinking about food. So let's talk about Etruscan food.
Well, we're going to talk about getting to Perugia in a little bit of history.
Let's talk about getting to Perugia.
I'm sorry, the food episode is another episode. For all of you who are like mouth-watering at this.
Sorry, I got distracted thinking about my sandwich.
Well, I guess that's like, because that's mostly history, though. I mean, there's a ton of history. It's all we mentioned in the Florence episode as well. They were part of the Salt Wars, as was Perugia. They, you know, I mean, still will have unsalted bread and by and large unsalted bread. It was very difficult to find salted bread.
Yeah, I think it was harder to find salted bread in Perugia than it was in Florence. Florence is a big city catering to people from a lot of different places.
That's, I think, I'm willing to bet, like, I don't know, 50 years ago, it might have been the same. But now it's like, there's so many Americans expecting really salted bread there that they have to sort of cater to that. But again, as Darcy mentioned earlier, a lot of the tourists in Perugia are Italian tourists, so it's potentially less surprising to find unsalted bread. But some interesting fun facts for you before you do go, before you decide to go.
And we'll talk about chit-chatting about random things.
Well,
you're gonna leave. But speaking of history, the University of Perugia was started in 1308.
Yeah, we mentioned what I think in the day trips from Florence episode, the oldest university, I believe, in the world, and the oldest continuously operating university that does not have religious roots, I should say, or at least it did not start as a religious school. I have no idea it has religious roots, is the University of Bologna. Mm-hmm. But this was started a few hundred years later, but it's still quite an old university, and it's still operating today, which explains a lot of the students in Perugia. It's we saw the statistic when we were looking for housing, and it's something like that the town is like 60% empty when school's not in session, because that's how many students, that's basically, it's almost predominantly students or wealthy people, because you're either getting, you either have money to basically rent or you're getting a huge tax break. And I say wealthy for those of you thinking like $2,000 or $3,000 a month, I'm talking like Italian wealthy. So like $800 a month is like, oh man, you rent a nice place, especially in a place like Perugia. Like in Rome, $800 a month is like a one bedroom in a decent-ish location.
Yeah.
Perugia, $800 a month is like a two bedroom in a nicer location. Like if you have $1,200 a month in Perugia, you're doing real well.
A nice apartment with a pretty painted ceiling on Main Street.
So for those of you curious, we're going to talk all about renting and stuff like that in other episodes. But now that I've mentioned it here, we will throw on two links down there below. These are not affiliate links. These are just regular links. Immobiliare.it and then Idealista.it. .it just being .it. And they are Italian rental websites, basically. They're the two of the biggest ones. And if anyone's curious just about living there, but also specifically, because so much of this is on visiting, we have found a decent amount of apartments that, like, long-term apartments, like a month or even 2 or 3 weeks.
Especially on Idealista.
Yeah.
Idealista. It's pretty big here in Italy to do, especially during the summer, weekly and monthly rentals. And those things do run through like regular rental sites, not just Airbnb type situations.
Well, especially because Airbnb takes money and Idealista and Immobiliare don't. They just act as like
an aggregate.
Yeah, an aggregate. So it's like a lot of people will be like, if if you want to stay here, you know, message Marco at this number, and then, you know, you basically paying cash when you get there and you get this apartment for a week or a month. And it's one of those like time honored traditions of renting someplace that just sort of cuts out. I mean, I don't know. We talk a lot about like how we use Airbnb, but we also don't love the idea of Airbnb.
Yes.
So it's sort of like, if you've ever heard of HomeAway, there's this website called HomeAway, which is sort of like Airbnb, but you have to live at somebody's house with them, ideally. You're just renting a bedroom from a person. So the idea is it doesn't destroy neighborhoods because the homeowner has to be living there as well. So it's
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and it seems pretty popular. It seems pretty, I don't know. And the idea is sort of revolutionizing, like, you know, let's not take away Airbnb entirely because it's often a lot cheaper and it gives you the amenities of a house in the sense that it has like a kitchen. But the idea,
I mean, that is an option on Airbnb as well.
It is, but it seems like less now.
Well, you say that. I'm just gonna go off topic slightly because that's what we've been doing all episode.
Darcy.
Y'all. No, New York, I believe, is introducing a regulation or it's being voted on, something like that, where they are limiting or halting Airbnbs where you live on your own in someone else's house. They're making it so that you have to like have a room in someone else's house and the homeowner has to be there.
That's interesting. No, and I think especially in relation to Perugia, which is not that inhabited in the off peaks, in the off seasons, or as we have found, it's not necessarily uninhabited in the summer. It's just it flops over from student housing to vacation rentals.
Yeah.
And then kind of, yeah, basically it doesn't ever become permanent. And a lot of that
They have a big transitional population. So what do I mean by that? I don't know. I lost my train of thought. What I mean is that the population turns over from students to people visiting frequently.
Not to mention, going back to that, transitional worker, transient worker, they do also have a lot of them, but more in, one thing we've noticed is almost somehow more in business. Like a lot of the, when we spent a lot of time looking for apartments, by the way, this is why we have all this knowledge. It's, we ended up going back there a year later, 7 months later, last year, something like that. Maybe 2 years later. Anyway,
who knows, time is a construct.
It really is. It's just been a nightmare. But when we went back to look at apartments, so many of them were only renting to workers, short-term workers, but like white-collar short-term workers.
Nurses and things as well,
But it's almost like, I'm like, are people, so I don't know if businesses are basically, we'll send you to Perugia to have like some business meetings, blah, blah, blah. But instead
to work on this project that'll take 6 months or
and
something.
Instead of like putting you in a hotel, we'll put you in this apartment.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because, I mean, they were like really nice apartments too. They were like, oh man, that's so nice. I wish we were transient workers. We're going to find out at the end of this episode. It's not transient, by the way. It's going to be something else, but transitory. Anywho, I hope nobody else is like Googling this to figure out what it is. So there is the University of Perugia.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the
Università degli Studi, right?
Which is the,
okay.
And they have like, you're going to find, if you go, you're going to find that they have pretty much buildings all over Perugia, especially like on the outskirts. They'll have a farming and agriculture department.
Yes, agricultural. It says like agricultural university, but it's part of the bigger university, right?
Yeah, and I think it's like farming sciences or something like that. It's one of the weirdly few in all of Italy, despite the fact it's a very heavily farming country.
Agriculturally.
Oh, there we go. Thank you. What is that called? No, they basically have these little buildings. They have buildings all over it's what do they call that in the States? It's like a campus town or something like that.
Sure, that sounds like a real thing.
Well, it's like, you know how like basically there's some colleges that have a campus and there's some colleges like the town is our campus.
Right.
And I don't know the name before, but Perugia is like the town is our campus.
Right.
Is their thing. But there's also the University of Foreigners. That's like not their second biggest, but that's definitely one of the more well-known ones, despite the fact it's actually quite small. It's only a few hundred students a year, because it's only one building.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's in a very prominent location. It was started by fascists, interestingly enough. And it was a way
I didn't mean to sound excited about that. Sorry.
I thought it was just more like, ooh, do tell.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Spill the tea. I don't know. Is people used to spill the tea? Is that still a thing?
Probably not.
I watched one season of The Circle, everybody's saying, oh my God, spill the tea, and I just can't get it out of my head. No, but it was started by a fascist in order to spread fascism. They thought it was like, I think this is before Mussolini. It was more just like, when this is a dope idea, we should tell other people about it. And then they're like, you guys want to come to this university and we'll not so subtly tell you about fascism.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So of course I think it's shed its roots since then. Hopefully I have not really figured it out, but these are the things you should probably look into before you apply to universities, right? Like,
are they fascist?
And also, how much does it cost a year?
Yeah.
And
two main
questions. Student housing
have.
Available? But no, the university foreign is quite popular. I think, and I don't want to say anything and then be completely wrong, but there seems to be a lot of Americans. They teach in English. I do know that.
Mm-hmm. Not and there's all... an English, no, sorry, Italian as a second language is a big thing there, right? Like, you don't
it
have
is,
to be
yeah.
just a college student. Like, you can go take
classes.
Classes.
If you live in Perugia and you want to learn Italian. They also have, like, the... we're going to talk all about this in other episodes, but like to become a citizen, one of the things you need to do is pass a B1 language test. And that's one of the places that offers a B1 language test, as well as the
classes
you need to kind of like get to it, which if you honestly have the money, it's sort of like a crash course in Italian because while B1 seems difficult, I think if you don't know any Italian, it's one of those things that very quickly on you'll know, but also it's, I don't know, I'm curious, some of these classes are so targeted towards it that it's almost like taking
the
SAT.
Oh, like they help you take the test?
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, you're taking the SAT, but it's just learning how to take the test. It's not learning how to be critical or actually understand questions. It's just, what is that question trying to say kind of thing. So, University of Foreigners is potentially more well-known, obviously, outside of Perugia than inside of Perugia. And then there's University of Perugia. If you're looking to apply for, you know, a residency visa through a student visa, basically,
mm-hmm.
University of Foreigners is a very popular way to do so.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what else is fun about Perugia?
Well, there's three other universities.
I did not know this.
Yeah.
I lived there for almost 6 months, maybe more. I apparently did not know that.
Yeah, lots of universities. So the two we mentioned are the two biggest ones, but there's also the Pietro Vannucci Fine Arts Academy, the Perugia Music Conservatory, which I think is just for classical music.
That makes sense.
If
big on classical
conservatory
music.
Is indicative of classical, and all of you people who know more about music, you might be criticizing me, but I didn't know that. I think it's just for classical music. And then there's the RAI Public Radio, RAI Public Radio Broadcasting School of Radio, TV, and Journalism.
Oh, well, that is pretty interesting.
Yeah,
it's,
that's neat.
For anyone who knows, RAI is like the biggest TV, like the basically the biggest sort of... I don't know, it's like CNN or Fox News or any of these giant, massive media conglomerates.
I feel like it's like BBC.
Yeah, I could
only because like there's like BBC One and BBC Four, and there's
exactly.
like radio and TV. RAI is that way here.
Yeah, it has like RAI One, right? Like there'd be movies or sports or this or that. Yeah, I was thinking because I'm thinking like the only thing like those because Fox and CNN I think both have sports, or at least Fox has sports. Like Fox Sports is a big thing. They also have like the Fox Movie Division and the Fox this. It's not just the news outlet.
Interesting.
So
I mean, I guess I knew that, but I didn't really think about it.
Yeah, so that's the kind of RAI is just this massive thing where it's interesting they have their own school for it. Wonder if anybody can go. So moving
you
on.
You want to get into
I definitely do not.
TV
I just, they're all
journalism
it's so
and
wild.
Radio.
If anybody's ever seen like Italian TV, it's just the weirdest thing I've it's just like a mix between like really bad acting. Not even bad acting, that's not true. It's very soap acting, soap opera acting.
Yes.
And I don't know. I think maybe it's just soap opera acting.
Yeah.
It's like if there's a tragedy, they're like, and I'm like, what are you doing? What are you not even reporting the news? Like there's tears in their eyes, and they have this. They go for the close up, and you can just see like the spray tan or the painted on makeup, and then like the next story is something completely different. So they go from tears, and it's like immediately dried up tears. And like, anyway, this woman's hair was caught in a machine the other day. When I was like, wait, what? What? No, go back. Hold up. You can't. Just you are. It's the fakest things I've ever seen in my life.
That's how news is anywhere. They go from tragedy to like, here's a basket of puppies.
I know, but I like when they're not sad about it. They're like, there was a tragedy yesterday. Moving on, there's a basket of puppies. Later,
oh, okay.
We're going to show you a tragedy involving a basket of puppies.
Oh, no.
I see. That's,
yeah, that does sound like American news.
Right? It's always like the announcer voice. So this has turned horrific. Let's keep going.
Okay. Do you want to talk about... there's a bunch of festivals in
yes.
Perugia.
There's also, I think, if I may, there's a lot of famous festivals everywhere in Italy, but... No, that's not true. There's a lot of festivals everywhere in Italy. There are some famous-er festivals in Perugia for such a small size. Like, I genuinely cannot name a single festival in Florence.
That's true. I guess Perugia is concentrated with festivals that people know about and are maybe different than, like, other more traditional Italian festivals. Like, here where we are in a small town, there's saint days all the time,
mm-hmm.
and there are often processions for these saint days where they do like a little parade through the streets, and some of them are bigger festivals. But Perugia does have some that are not like, I guess, Catholic related, and they're interesting
with also a very international flavor to them.
Yes,
I think that's one of the big things. Like even Rome has some festivals, but a lot of them aren't as international. Like I'm not talking about music festivals and stuff. I'm just guys talking about non musical festivals. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them are like they're very focused on Italy. But I can also be wrong because I can't really name any festivals anywhere except like Mardi Gras, which is not the same as the Umbrian Jazz Festival, which is the first of you might have heard it. If you're in the jazz world, it seems quite well known.
Sure.
No, I'm not, but so it's just like there's a lot of famous jazz acts, and my uncle who likes jazz music will be like, of course I've heard of the Umbria Jazz Festival. I'm like, okay. Oh, that's wild. Hmm. But the Umbria Jazz Festival is held in Perugia every mm-hmm. year. Mm-hmm. What month?
We have the month down? July.
Oh, yeah, because we did stumble on like the tail end of it.
We did. We did not intentionally attend an event.
We felt like such just like Neanderthals. Like, what is this? Music.
Are you insulting Neanderthals?
No, I guess not. We felt like such, what are the people who are like,
you could say a goober?
Well, I was thinking those like, oh, you're such a Philistine, but then I'm insulting the Philistine. Can't believe these are the length of the Philistine's beard. They used to be a length. Darcy's shrugging, but it used to be a length. Like,
wow.
No, okay. But like they have the inscriptions of like it's four Philistines' beards, and I'm like, well, that's,
is that a thing?
Yeah.
Wow, lots of random facts today.
This is what happens when I have coffee, y'all. It's not a regular occasion for me for many reasons, but this is one of them. What else is there?
There's the Euro Chocolate Festival.
Yes, and that's I wonder what's related, because if you've heard of Perugia, there's a small chance you've heard of it because there is a chocolate brand mm-hmm. called Perugina. It's now owned by Nestle, so that comes with a nice wide variety of complications for people who don't like to eat slave chocolate. Mm-hmm. So believe it or not,
we don't eat Perugina because it's not ethically sourced.
Yeah. In addition to, it's probably the largest chocolate brand in Italy, and it's probably one of the more famous ones. And if you've ever heard of there's these little, they're kind of like the Ferrero Rocher or truffle things but they're called Baci, B-A-C-I. It looks like Bacchi, I don't know how you pronounce it in English, but it's pronounced Baci in Italian, mm-hmm. and it just means kisses. And we didn't really talk about this in the gelato episode, because it was, which was about a year and a half ago, because it's a little difficult to explain, I guess. It's long-winded to explain for one flavor, but Baci, the flavor, is a really popular flavor of gelato in Italy. Mm-hmm. And almost...
I feel like it's the same as having like a Snickers-flavored ice cream.
Yeah.
It's a Baci-flavored ice cream, so it's flavored like a little chocolate truffle.
Exactly, yeah. Like between, they have like Nutella and they have like Baci.
Yeah.
They always have these like fun little brands. So... There's the Euro Chocolate Festival, but it's more than just Perugina. There are some local chocolate makers, but it's supposed to be sort of a international chocolate makers festival in October?
October.
Mm-hmm. October.
Because that starts the chocolate season for Italians. Chocolate is not a year-round flavor here.
It is very much not.
It's old school. So like fall and winter is when you have chocolate.
It's wild though. You go to the supermarket in most of Italy, and for most of the year they have this like tiny little chocolate selection. Like just... you know, a couple different bars of like Lindt or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of all you're going to find. But as soon as it gets to October, it's like they took out all the other candy. Yeah. And it's just nothing but chocolate bars from just, whether it's like just more Lindt chocolate bars or from all over Italy or from other brands or from like the Cadbury. I was like, Cadmium? Is that a real chocolate brand? for like the Cadbury chocolate and stuff like that. So they do get kind of like, it's very seasonal. It's very much mm-hmm. when it gets cold, when it gets wintry. Apparently, nobody wants to curl up with a pint of ice cream, because you also might find, as we mentioned in the gelato episode, that a lot of gelateria in small cities close in the winter or stop selling gelato and start selling pastries and chocolate.
Yes.
Kind definitely. Of a fun double duty. So what other kind of fun festivals were held there?
Well, there's the International Journalism Festival, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's in April.
We did. We looked into that because it was like, who was it? Carl Bernstein and...
Edward Snowden.
Edward Snowden both. Yeah, they both presented or both spoke at it. Bernstein, obviously famous for the Watergate scandal. Snowden, famous for the whole NSA has been spying on us and stealing all of our secrets. And now everybody's not surprised that the government knows everything about you. Conspiracy.
Yeah.
Fame. So a lot of fun. A lot of big names. But no, it's one of those, like, again, small but powerful sort of festivals. Like, I mean, it's just one of those weird things where, like, oh, they're really attracting some big names for such this tiny little town. Town being, it's a city.
It's a city, yeah.
But it's only about 100 and, 140,000 people.
Is that people who live there year round, or does that include like
the season? That's apparently the census. Students? So it's people who have residency there. Yeah.
So I wonder what it's like whenever there's students there who aren't residents.
Probably a lot more than 130,000. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like a very tightly packed city.
Yeah.
When it's this, like the student season.
No, I think that's for sure. Yeah. No, it becomes. It, yeah. Are there anything else? Any other festivals?
What was your last question?
I feel like the moderator, ma'am, were there any more festivals in Perugia?
That was your question?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there might be, but I didn't write them down.
Okay.
Because those are the three main festivals. I say I don't know because there are so many festivals in so many towns that aren't, like, listed anywhere. It's just the thing they do on, like, April 2nd of every year. Oh, that's not a real date. That's a random day. You know.
Well, we saw that like one candlelight vigil one that was just a bunch of people holding a candle walking down the road.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds way worse. It was really kind of cool. But there's also like there's a farmer's market type of thing once a year. I mean, no, sorry, there's a farmer's market in Perugia, but there's one that's like...
Oh, like the Antiques Fair.
Yeah, exactly. The Antiques Fair. That's maybe a couple of times a year. There's a bunch of those kind of, not festivals, but fairs and...
Events.
Events, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in Perugia.
So how do we get to Perugia if we wanted to visit?
Well, that's a great question, Nathaniel. Let's talk about it. Okay, so like everywhere else, there's the train and bus options.
The train, though,
yes,
is a little bit more of a sticky situation than it is in other cities.
Do you think so? Only because there aren't like fast trains very often?
Yeah.
But there's the regional trains. One a day. There's only one fast train to Perugia every day, and I think it's at like 5 a.m.
Yeah.
So it seems terrible.
Well, the reason I mentioned that is because it is like, depending on how you're getting there. But from Rome, for instance, because it's a regional or the fast regional, which is called the Regionale Veloce,
mm-hmm.
Which is not like, don't let fast mislead you into thinking it's fast. It's just like skips it's and stops.
Faster than slow.
Yeah. It's like 12 minutes earlier. And like $10 more expensive. It's kind of ridiculous, to be honest. But no, we've taken a variety of trains to Perugia over the couple of times we've gone there, both for day trips and for moving there trips. And sometimes it's almost like if you've at all been into Italy, there's a sort of a shuttle called the Leonardo Express from the Rome airport to Rome. And the best way to describe it is sort of like a really fancy subway, or like I don't know, the LARR, the Long Island Railroad,
yeah,
or something
like
that.
Maybe it's like the LARR.
It's just something that's very like, it's just to get people from point A to point B. It's not the most comfortable seats in the world. It's adapted for more luggage, but it's a train like that that brings you up to Perugia because it's regional, so it drops like at every single stop along the way, and that's like about 2 hours and change.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that literally on a fast train it's like 45 minutes away. So the reason I say that though is because also the platform for that is always a little bit harder to find in Rome, just because we've always gone from Rome, and it's always in like platform 1A or 1B and 2B.
Oh, is it the one that's like really far away?
It's a 1 kilometer walk in the train station, but like it's something like 1,000 yards away.
It is weird, yeah. So like when you're in Termini,
yeah,
in Rome, there's like where you see all of the trains and it looks like a train station, it's normal, but then there's like, you're right, it's like 1A and maybe even 1B or 2A, something like that, and you like take a left, go around all the trains and just walk for forever to this like extended extra platform that's like
only for certain regional trains though.
Yeah,
it's for like Foligno and for Perugia and for like a couple other like oh, is that I have to get there, which is weird. So all that is to say is like it's for being such a capital city, for being such a big city in the sense that it's big in prowess, not big necessarily in size,
but in population during the student
time
of year. So it surprises me that there aren't more frequent fast trains to Perugia.
That's the thing. It's like it is surprising that there isn't a way of quickly getting there. So,
but there is there's a summer link from Florence to Assisi in Perugia. I think that as of recording this episode, I think it stopped for the summer. I'm pretty sure it stops mid-August.
But it should start in June, July, something like that. When the summer ones are always a little weird. Like they do a lot of, it's called Freccia Link. Freccia being the train company, Trenitalia. So they have like these like Freccia Link, which is just a bus. It makes it way more fancy when they say it's Freccia Link. But it's a direct bus, which is really nice. going from Florence to Perugia and then Assisi. But you mentioned buses, and I will say we found that the train station in Perugia is at the bottom of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
So it requires you getting off the train, kind of walking around this to the bus area. And then near the bus area, there's something called a mini metro, which is a funicular, basically.
Yeah, it's not a metro at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't actually know the etymology or the definition of metro, but it's not a subway.
Yes, it's not under, well, it's under a tunnel at one
it's
point.
It's a tunneled funicular.
Yeah, and it's kind of a fun, I'll be honest, it's a very
oh,
fun
it's
way.
It's really fun.
Yeah, I mean, it goes very slow, so it's not like there's like whoosh uphill. It's just like...
It kind of looks like you're like entering like a space station.
Yeah. And it's really, honestly, it's kind of a fun way to visit Perugia the first time. But, it doesn't get you, basically it brings you up to like this, the mini metro station. And then from there you have to take either escalators or an elevator on an angle.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's like instead of going up and down, it goes up and down, but... sideways.
Yeah, like up the mountain.
Yeah, it's kind of a really neat little thing. Really neat elevator. And it might be useful. I'm saying this on the off chance and he was actually still listening at 46 minutes in, because if you have big luggage, you almost certainly will not be able to take some of the escalators. The escalators are firmly big enough for one person. And I don't know how wide I am. Let's just say I'm like a foot and a half wide. I don't know, like 2 feet wide?
I would go 2 feet.
Let's say I'm 2 feet wide. And like my hips almost touch the edges of the escalator. So like if your suitcase is more than 24 inches, especially on the side, but if it's more than 24 inches, it's difficult to take the escalator, as we found.
Hmm.
You have to kind of take the elevator.
I didn't realize they were that small. I didn't think about it.
Well, the first couple are normal sized.
Yeah.
And then the more you get up, especially... between that, the Rocco Paolina and then the actual above, they use those tiny little ones.
Oh.
Those are like super skinny ones.
Huh.
And that's just something to consider if you are bringing a lot of luggage, that it's not like easy to get on the escalator with a lot of mm-hmm. luggage. So there's an elevator available that gets you up as well. Plus, if you use any like mobility devices or anything like that, wheelchairs, walkers, crutches, an elevator is available and it brings you to a place that has a wheelchair ramp.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're basically in town. It's quite simple.
Absolutely. And so if you arrive by train, you're going to take the little mini metro funicular and then get to the escalators or elevator, and that will bring you basically into the center of town. If you arrive by bus,
yes,
which there's like Flixbus is big. I think there's also Ita Bus.
Mm-hmm.
Which is that by a train?
I don't think so. Looks like it's supposed to be by like Italo, but I don't think so.
Okay, it's just a bus company. Okay.
Yeah.
There's
also Marino Bus.
Yeah.
Or Bus Marino Bus, something like that. And I don't think the Adolina Toscana might run like some seasonal route to Perugia. I don't think they do, but there might be something like that goes to at least the, because they're so close. They really do share a lot of some like similar. Routes on other buses, so they might have something that they share. But yeah, they go up into town.
In town, but you still have to take escalators up.
Yes.
So
yes.
You arrive, just to make sense of this for y'all, you arrive at a different spot. You don't arrive to the train station. You arrive higher up the mountain, and then you still have to cross the street and take escalators up, and then you'll go through the Rocca Paolina, which is what Nathaniel was just talking about, we should talk about it in a minute so we can go over it more, but it's a historical landmark and it's like dark and cool, and you like just enter the inside of a building suddenly and then you walk through the building.
It's essentially, I think, a good way, it's a castle, is essentially,
yeah,
I think,
it's a very dark
citadel bastion, so it's very
castle.
Dark, so they've got like skylights and floor lights.
Yeah,
basically it's a skylight on the floor, so the people below you have light and the people above you have light.
Mm-hmm. But you like it's I mentioned it because it feels weird to walk through there with luggage, because it's almost,
yes,
like you've entered a museum by accident.
Yes.
But then that's where you're supposed to be, and you'll take escalators farther up once you walk through the Rocca Paolina, and you'll arrive in the center of town.
Yeah, and that's how most of you will probably arrive.
Mm-hmm.
There's the other way I mentioned with the wheelchair ramp is it's a slightly different area, but you still enter through some kind of cavernous thing at some point. There's still some sort of underground thing.
Is there?
I thought so.
Huh.
Maybe not. Maybe there's just the one. It's hard to remember. They're really big, though, putting escalators in fun medieval locations.
Yeah.
And I will say, though, the escalators, there's three escalators, four escalators around Podocha. Like, when I say escalators, I don't mean actual, just the I mean escalator systems, for lack of a better word, that are four different locations in Podocha, or three different locations in Podocha that can get you from both the bottom of the hill, which really genuinely there's no reason to be at the bottom of the hill for any reason mm-hmm. at all, unless you live down there. Or if you arrive by train. But like if you're visiting for a few days, you're not going to be down at the, as you go down the hill, it gets more and more suburban.
And much, much newer.
And much, much newer. Yeah. So it's like very much.
Immediately 1980s almost.
Yeah. Well, there's like the 1920s and then there's the 1980s.
That's true. You're right. That's true.
Oh, that's new. And then there's like, oh God, that's new.
Yeah.
So there's no reason to be down there, but it's good to know they exist if you like drove there and you need to park somewhere. And take the, because the escalators do hit up pretty much all the parking lots, because driving in Podocha is ridiculously limited to people who have, like the, there's all these,
resident
like,
pass?
Yeah, there's the ETL, which is like a limited traffic zone, and so you can't drive, we hilariously drove through one.
When we were moving out of our apartment, we thought we would be allowed to bring a rental car up our street to pack up the car. That was not true. So we got a ticket.
Yeah. So if you want to avoid 60 euro tickets for driving into residential areas you're not allowed to be in.
Ooh, okay. I don't know if we've ever mentioned this before, but if you are driving in Italy, just so you know, it's not a situation like in the US or I imagine lots of English-speaking countries or lots of countries. You probably will not be pulled over by a police officer to get a ticket. You'll get it like in the mail or I guess by email?
Mail.
Mail. They'll send it to the US. Or,
well, they sent it to your mom's house, which is her.
I forgot. So yeah, so you might leave your trip happy-go-lucky thinking that you didn't get any parking tickets until 2 months later when one arrives in the mail.
However, they do just, I'm glad you brought that up though, because I mean, you for sure will get pulled over for the Carabinieri if you're like on the state roads. Not for speeding, but for like other things.
Yeah, I mean, they do pull you over, but what I'm saying is just if you did not get pulled over, doesn't mean that you didn't get a ticket.
Because there are the speed cameras on the highways, and then as you mentioned, the ZTLs have cameras as well, and they send it to, if it's a rental car, what they do is they send it to the rental car agency, and the rental car agency tacks on a little bit of extra money and then sends it to the address that you have, that they have basically on a file for your driver's license. You do have, I think it's basically, it's something like 5 days from when you receive the ticket to pay it, and then every like 5 days after that it goes up until it hits, like, you know, next time you're in Italy, we're just gonna put you in jail for the night. But no, it's one of those things. It's like, don't panic if you're like, oh my god, that was 3 months ago. Oh my god, how much do I owe?
Yes,
it's you just owe point. From when you received the ticket. Mm-hmm. They're not completely rude about that. But if you happen to be in Italy, you can definitely contest it. If you happen to still be in Italy for some miracle when you receive a ticket, you can absolutely just go to the city hall and contest it and spend the next 3 to 4 weeks at city hall contesting it.
Doing piles of paperwork.
Yeah, that's sure. Also an option. But that's all to say, don't... I guess I was basically building up to the fact that Perugia is very much not a driving... while there are roads, you don't have to worry too much about cars. A lot of the roads will be car-free, especially in town. Even the main, I talked about that main road at the top of town, they only allow traffic at certain times of the day, and it's only certain types of traffic, like taxis, delivery vans, medical vans, or medical, like, ambulances. Yeah. Police cars, hilariously, will sometimes go up and down that road, like, slowly behind you, and you don't have to move out of the way for them. You can just sort of slowly walk in front of them. Not to make them angry, but just because it's like they get to drive there when nobody else gets to drive there. So it's always just really weird that you're, I don't know, enjoying a gelato and you turn around and there's this like car a foot away from you that's slowly inching up. So yeah, it's very, very, driving, non-friendly, but that makes it walking friendly.
Much is traffic in other parts of town, there are many, many streets that are just, walking streets.
Yeah. And that's for getting there. Is that all for getting there?
Yeah.
The bus, the train, and then drive. If you happen to be driving, there's parking lights outside of town. Yeah, that's awesome. Okay.
I think we should start wrapping up, but I do want to talk about the Rocca Paolina.
Before we do, just because we also talked about getting around, I just want to throw out one more thing, and then we're totally done with getting around. While I did say it was a walking friendly town, I do want to sort of correct it slightly in the sense that it is, like most of Italy, it's walking friendly. I guess for people who don't use mobility devices, but also for people who are not...
It's hilly.
Yeah, well, not it's... just hilly. No, I meant but like the stones like, on the terrain that main thing.
Yeah.
It's like some of them are completely pitted out and some are flat. So like if you're just not... I mean, the amount of times you just haven't been paying attention walking and then you step on what you think is the stone the same height as the last one, you sink down an inch, then you trip over something and you're on the ground and you're like, wait, how did that... I thought I was okay. And that's just as a kind of a warning of like, it's especially evident when it's been raining.
Yes.
It just all turns into puddles. And it's especially evident if you have a roller bag. Mm-hmm.
And speaking of the hills, it's all paved.
They're alive with music?
It's the sound of music. I bet that was really close.
Wow. Oh man, I should just delete that.
Are you gonna deal with the Sound of Music fans, the musical fans?
I'm so sorry.
Julie Andrews fans.
What if she's listening to us? What if she's like, I can't believe my greatest piece of work has been misremembered? I mean, let's be honest though, Princess Diaries is the greatest piece of work. I have no doubt about that in my mind.
Okay, I'm realizing how many Julie Andrews movies I could probably name off the top of my head. I didn't realize the skill I had.
We wasted our talents on an Italian podcast. We could put a Julie Andrews podcast.
Okay, so anyways, like Nathaniel's saying, it's all the streets are essentially paved in stone, so they are what do you call it, like uneven.
Yes.
But also it's quite hilly, or like when you're walking down the ridge, essentially down these little streets off the main street, they're really steep and can become quite slippery in the rain.
Very true. Plus I was gonna say, that's a really good point, because a lot of them, they do like score the stones to make it easier to walk on, especially around like curves where like the inside of the curve will be much steeper than the outside of the curve. But also it's like, I mean, as you mentioned, it's hilly, but it's predominantly hilly in one direction. So like you're going to go down a hill. No, but that's the thing. Yeah. Like from the top of town, you can only go down, which just, again, in the rain, it kind of could make it a little dangerous to go down. But then likewise, coming back up, you just gotta be extra careful. And again, we only say that because it's something that it's just so, it's like from pictures and everything else, and even being there, it's just like, of course it's flat. It's flat everywhere. And I don't think you and I realized, because the first time we went, we had a backpack each, and it was like, this is easy. And then it wasn't until we had to roll a bag, and then we had like a box of stuff because we were moving there, that we're like, oh my God, this is not flat at all. This is a nightmare. And we have seen like people who use wheelchairs getting pushed around, or rolling themselves, but it's not like there's a couple of I don't know what they even are. They're almost like channels for water, like for rainwater on either side of like the main streets, the main boulevards, that are completely smooth.
Yeah.
That they did like make sure these are like fully smooth, and so you do have typically we realize a lot of elderly people walk there.
Yeah.
Because there's no chance of...
It's more even.
There's a less of a chance of tripping. Mm-hmm. But rolling on any of the flat parts makes it a lot easier. But that's just to say, we realize that while they have done a lot to kind of increase the possibility of mobility in Perugia, and even in places like Siena, I think we've talked about, it's still not perfect. It's still something to just kind of like keep in mind, that it's still quite difficult to like... Even for, I think you and I sometimes, it's a little bit like, wow, this is, you know, having a conversation, you keep just hitting stuff with your feet. And you're like, am I just losing my mind?
There are some times that I get overwhelmed. I get overwhelmed walking in crowds and talking at the same time. I get overwhelmed extra whenever I have to look where I'm going. So there's sometimes when I have to tell them, like, I need to not talk right now. I'm focusing on not falling.
Yeah, exactly. sorry. So thank you for letting me diverge mm-hmm. into this yellow wood. Two paths diverge in a yellow wood.
So I know the Sound of Music songs, and you know the two. I don't know what
I took the one less traveled. Isn't it yellow wood? Yeah, I think it's yellow wood.
Huh.
Isn't it?
I don't know.
Frost? Man, I gotta Google
Frost.
This now.
You know, Frost. My man Frost. Yeah, I know.
No, but it's like the one that everybody's like, two paths diverge in a yellow wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. It's like the one that everybody uses in Poetry Week in high school.
Well, I mean, when you say it, I like recognize it, but I could never recite it.
I know, I gotta look this up now. But you were gonna talk about the Rocco Paolino.
Yeah, I was. But what that means is I was gonna ask you to talk about it.
Well, I haven't talked enough this episode, so I think that would be a really fair opportunity for me to...
I think so too.
...to talk a little more and share some of my ideas. The Rocco Paolino, I'm not sure I'm giving it a weird accent, is the... the southern... tip of Perugia. Darcy, you mentioned the park, the Giardino. And it's basically, it's right on top of something called the Rocca Paolina, which is a fortress, essentially, built in like 1540 to 1543 or something like that. And it was on the ruins of a castle that was built just before it. But then 3 years after the castle was built, the populace of Perugia destroyed the castle. And so the Pope at the time was not super happy about that. And the Pope was like, you know what? We need to show these people we need business. I think both the castle and this Rocca Paolina, which Rocca just means fortress, so the Paolina fortress, it was basically built as like kind of a way of cementing the Pope's willpower, the strength, I think, maybe is a better way to put it. When he was victorious in the Salt Wars, not him, he didn't do anything, but his soldiers, I suppose, victorious in the Salt Wars. So it was kind of a way of like basically, you know, we want to build something that just pisses you all off. And the neighborhood they chose is the Borgo San Giuliano. I just like St. Julian, St. Julia, the neighborhood. It was a wealthy neighborhood. It was home to the Baglioni family, which is a kind of a very strong, wealthy ruling family of Perugia at the time, as well as like monasteries and churches and what is the little thing with the little door that opens? Tower doors? Yeah, it's like for the wall, the doors, the gate. Anyway, home to a gate. I guess the door.
Okay.
What do they call that in a castle? The castle walls that has a castle door. Oh. Gate. Big, gate? Giant doors.
Drawbridge.
Right? No. I know. So, it's amazing. We should be historians. They would totally love us to be there at the dig site. Be like, oh, that looks like doors to me. So that is all to say. It was very much a political move to destroy essentially a neighborhood, a wealthy neighborhood, but also
hundreds of buildings.
Yeah,
and, stuff,
and a lot of them were the Etruscan and Roman buildings. So while this is done in the 1540s, the buildings, you know, were almost 2,000 years old. Some of them less old, you know, 1,500 years old. But still, like, we're talking, you know, I mean, it's like today destroying a, you know, 1,500-year-old city because they were fighting against you, which is not something we've ever done. and no, it's fascinating because it was first basically built, and it's hard to find information online. I realize it's a lot of this information we learned from the actual Rocca Paolina. It's turned in kind of like a quasi museum. And they did actually, weirdly enough, leave some of the streets there. So they just sort of built the fortress around the streets rather than like rebuilding walkways and pathways inside the fortress, which is really kind of interesting because I think when we're there, we were both recounting the fact that it's a cobblestone roads inside. We're like, that doesn't. Like, every other castle has these, like, especially in the castle, like, properly in the castle, has these smooth stones, like, flat.
It's a very odd, ominous structure.
Very dark, very ominous. And it was built, though, in a way to also block out sunlight from the east, for the east part of town, once the sun was setting. So the kind of the idea was, which is hilarious to me because it still affects things to this day. So because the east side of town is in the shadow in the evening, the west side of town, let's say, loses light at 7 o'clock or something like that, or maybe 9 o'clock in the summer. But because of the Rocca Paolina, the east side of town will lose it at like 5 or like, I don't know, 7, I guess, if it's in the summer. But when we looked for apartments, which is why it's so funny to me, is when we looked for apartments, it was just like, oh, this is a nice side of town, but oh my God, it's like 3 o'clock and the sun's already going down behind that giant building.
It's a beautiful part of town, but it really is in the shade.
Yeah, and because of that, the hill was there before the building, but the building was kind of built as just like a little extra bit of a screw you.
They were throwing shade.
As they say. That's where the expression actually comes from. it does not. Please never repeat that to people. I heard on this podcast. You should check it out. So it's a fascinating, I don't know. It's just one of those things that like, I think coming from a place that's very young, America, you know, United States, where our conception of America, I guess, is quite young. Like, it's like, oh, but, you know, we have history dating back to like the 1600s, and everyone's like, yeah, we were pissed off for 100 years by the 1600s. But no, it's just fascinating that like these little decisions that, I don't know, it's like how much they affect in the future. And I'm not just saying it affects like housing and this and that, but it's just this, I don't know, sometimes there's still in both in the Rocca Paolina and the fact that the bread still doesn't use salt because they're like, all right, if we're going to tax salt, we're never going to use it. And there's so many of these things that are just these like deep-seated grievances that aren't, they almost don't feel historical in many ways.
Yeah, because they're still happening.
Well, they're still happening, but I think more they're just like, I think they're still happening, but also I was just thinking more in that sense of, Perugia's always had, even though there have been popes there, I think both visiting or exiled, for a while, it was like one of the only free cities in all of Italy, not under the rule of a pope or another country, another government. Mm-hmm. And so they still have a lot of this, like, just anger and aggression, it feels like. And not necessarily, like, not outwardly, like, you know, yelling at you if you're Catholic or something ridiculous. It's just the way they talk about their history is very, not just proud, but I think very, like, I don't know. It's just sort of like we're trying to not be subjugated. And yeah. Oh my God, everyone's trying to subjugate us.
Mm-hmm.
So this is fascinating. It's just, I think when we talk about the South, and we will probably very soon, actually, this might be one of Perugia might be the last city in the North we'll talk about. But it's the South is very much still the same way. There's so many things that happened hundreds of years ago that people are like, talk about it like it happened last week. And they're just like, anyway, so this thing just, I'm like,
mm-hmm.
We're really still on about that. So it's really.
I will say though, just to put it in context, sure. I mean, I guess you and I have the context, but to put it in context, how we talk about this for everybody else is that there are very much still problems. Like the Rocca Pallina still casts shade on like half the town. And that's really pretty annoying. Like yeah. I wouldn't want to live over there. People in the south of Italy still very much have a grudge and issues with the way Italy was split up or not split up.
Well, the way Italy was unified.
Was unified. Exactly. But I think it's almost in like a softer daily begrudging way rather than like in the like the U.S. has messed up a lot of places, like colonization, awful.
It's a big one.
That's yeah, and so like I guess you and I don't mean to say that, you know, Southern Italians, ugh, they still struggle. Like there are Americans and indigenous people and lots of people all over the world who still struggle with hundreds of years of history, but here I think it's palpable for every Italian. Like, it's just something people talk about, like, at Sunday lunch and, like, you know.
And I think it's just the perspective of coming in, like, you hear about, I don't know, you read about these things in history class or something like that, and you think that, like, you know, nobody cares that Venice was once a kind, you know, that once fought with right. Florence over Siena or that, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, it was hundreds of years ago. And you're like, oh, all of you still care very, very, yeah. very much. Got it. I did not think that was a thing. Of course it is. I mean, even here, there's like here in this town, there's this whole thing about these 300 mm-hmm. people that went to fight. I mean, basically fight against the unification of Italy because it was sort of seen as the end of times for a variety of reasons, which we probably get into a little bit when we talk about the South later, because it does frame frame the South, because it's not like I think it's easy to think of it like this is, oh, it's like the Civil War in America, but like the Civil War was one country splitting into two, fighting a war, and then reunifying into one. But it wasn't like, it was around, like, the unification of Italy wasn't like, we're reunifying after the Roman Empire had unified us. It was like, mm-hmm. no, we've been our own country for hundreds, if not 1,000+ years. But even under the Roman Empire, it's like we weren't one place. We were mm-hmm. always still our own place. We had our own identity and our own, you know, customs and language and food. And even here, like I said, there's these 300 that went, like men basically went to fight, and they were sort of, I don't know, beaten by something like a day, an hour, a couple hours. It was like basically they
was that fast?
It was something they went to the coast to team up with other people willing to fight, but the opposing side had gotten there first and turned the town against the these 300, and they were massacred. And so it's just one of those things of like, oh. But these like little tiny bits of history, but it's like all of a sudden you have a town that doesn't have 300 people, 300 men anymore. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden it's like this, like it creates this like major power shift and major historical shift that sort of like, does it ever recover kind of thing. And a lot of small towns, I think, in Europe are like that, whether it's, you know, some towns are hit worse by certain sicknesses or illnesses or diseases
mm-hmm.
And then never recover. And we're talking about like they're hit bad in the 1700s. And they fall from like a high of, let's say, like 6,500 to 1,000, mm-hmm. which 6,500 is, I think, pretty respectable, you know, a few hundred years ago. But then you can never really figure out how to get, you
back
know,
to that point,
back
yeah.
to that point, because it's like we've lost all industry, you've lost all reason to be there.
Yeah.
So I think as we talk more about other places in the South, but I think, you know, we'll talk about it more, but I think Perugia is, I think for us, one of the first places we'd been to that there is really still, like, how much history is not necessarily you know, let bygones be bygones. It was very much...
Oh, yeah, it's still very much there. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think that's just a funny little thing. I mean, I imagine Florence has the same thing, but because we'd gone to Perugia first, it was just, you know, we'd only been to really Rome and some other small towns before then, or some, yeah, I mean, a ton of small towns before then, because that's where house sits and cheap stays were. But it was just weird to go to a big one and find that, like, you know, this thriving metropolis of international, with an international flair, was so hung up, not even a bad way hung up, but like influenced by mm-hmm. by a past that then it just sort of like, it's like, oh, of course, like who wouldn't be influenced by their past? So it's kind of a fascinating, like,
especially, you know, when it's standing around you.
Yeah, all yeah, the time, yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, and I think that's the thing, that's a living history thing. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, well, hopefully this episode has encouraged some of you to check it out, because we really do, for all of its many, many ups and downs we had in Perugia. I mean, obviously we lived there, so everybody has ups and downs in a place you live rather than just visiting. No, it very much kind of felt really kind of special finding it, I think.
Yeah, it's a beautiful city. Absolutely.
Yeah, like we'd never really heard about it in the States. It was never as popular as Florence and Siena and Rome and Milan and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And I think just it was like, oh, this is beautiful. And it's so cheap in comparison to Tuscany and Florence, and food and rent and everything. I mean, it was just like, oh my God, it's like half or a third of the price in some cases for what is essentially the same things. Mm-hmm. And it had the same feel of being in, like, you know, Tuscany.
Mm-hmm. And being in a pretty big city. I mean, it is hopping, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, I think especially when you said like the students and everybody's in town, it's hugely hopping. Mm-hmm. And there's always stuff happening. There's always stuff going on. And I think that was our other experience with it, which is like, there's always stuff going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the capital of Umbria. And I believe you've probably heard of, as Dersi mentioned, Assisi is also in Umbria. Mm-hmm. And then I believe Orvieto is also in Umbria as well. And that's just famous for having another, it's famous for having a cathedral, the Duomo di Orvieto, the, mm-hmm. the Orvieto Cathedral. So it's for being such a small and unknown area. They're also famous for like Montepulciano wine, handful of other little bits and bobs that are like kind of famous. But yeah, I think that's the episode on Perugia.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about food in Perugia next episode, right?
Yeah. Okay. I think at least just food, and then maybe food and day trips.
Yeah.
In case you all happen to make it your home for the week or something like that, and you want to go explore other areas. But besides that, I'm trying to rack our brain. I think that's everything. I think we pretty much we talked about Perugia for 30 minutes in this hour and 15-minute long episode. What a good job. What a great ratio. And as always, if you would like to support us, I know I put on like my announcer voice, I think
you
my,
do, yeah.
my like podcast voice, if you'd like to support the channel, but if you'd like to support us, there is a link in the description for Trusted House Sitters. I didn't say this earlier because it's long-winded, but it's basically 100 and something a year, and it goes up to like 300 and something a year depending on which plan you purchase. And it seems honestly ridiculously expensive, especially given the fact that other house sitting websites like Nomador or Mind My House are cheaper. But we have found the most success with Trusted House Sitters mm-hmm. simply because it is not targeted towards one area. Nomador is mostly like France and French locations. And then Mind My House is sort of international, but with like a pretty strong lean into like Australia. Mm-hmm. But that's like Trusted House Sitters has been the one we use for sort of the most house sits and the most sort of international house sits, the most at any given time. And we've just been really successful with it. So I think for us, it's like, I think we pay the $150 a year and we thought, oh my God, that is so much money. But then even in perspective of, you know, we'll spend $150 for a night at a hotel.
Right.
And that is so much less time than a 4-month or 4-week house sit somewhere.
Right.
So if you'd like to support us, there is a link in the description for that, as well as a link for any Perugia food tours. I'll probably throw the same link if I can find one in the next episode on food, as well as if you are interested by any chance in renting Idealista and Immobiliare, there'll be links for that in the description as well. But I think that's everything.
I think that's it.
Thank you all so much for listening to this episode,
yeah.
putting up with us, and having the patience to finish.
Listen to the end.
If you are listening at this point. Until next time, I've been Nathaniel Mellor.
And I've been Dersi Melton.
Good night.
Thanks for listening. It might not be nighttime where they are.
Good day.
Good. Have a good time.